Shallan has just been processing through, my own mother tried to kill me. Yes, she's crazy. Yes, there's some other weird things going on. But when your own mother goes to stab you and murder you, that does some damage to you. I mean, as we've seen. So for Shallan to get to that point where she can say, I forgive you, that's powerful. That is really powerful. This moment was big for me.
Welcome back to Following Noah Donnerstorm, my podcast. This week is episode 260, and we are in chapters 96 through 99 of Wind and Truth. Paul, how are you?
Amazing, as always. Excited. We are really... I was about to say we're really barreling through this book.
That's not the verb I would use.
That's not the right verb at all to use. It's what has it been, like 7 full-ish months now we've been going through this book? But we are wrapping up day 8 here soon, so just a couple more days to go. And things seem to be getting pretty real, pretty cool. So always excited to talk about it. Yeah, I'm doing good.
Elliot, how are you?
Similar sentiments to Paul, actually. I've been waiting for some of those big hitter chapters from Brandon. We've had a lot of good ones. We've actually had quite a few good chapters up until now, but we haven't really had that big, like, grand slam hit moment where you just set the book down and you go, yes. That was chapter 99, where I first got the first kind of yes moment with this book. Good stuff.
I agree. We get two moments back to back with Shallan and Dalinar, an unlikely duo, but we have several different things to talk about before we get there, including epigraphs, which took me a long time to write out over here. So, Elliot, can we get a brief summary of 96 all the way through 99?
Yes, yes, we can. In 96, we pick up with Zeth. He has just come back from the big reveal with the voice and the unmade. He saw what it is. He saw what it was doing, torturing some Spren. Now he's freaking out, trying to figure out what to do. So he goes and visits his father in chapter 96. He's kind of sort of trying to explain to his father what's going on, but then it was also just like, you know what? You just go hide. Stay safe. Things are about to get crazy. Chapter 97 is nothing less than Shallan's wedding day, which I'm going to have to eat some crow on this one, because I was 100% sure we were not going to see this. And then lo and behold, exactly as Trevor predicted, chapter 97 steps us right into Shallan's wedding day, which is beautiful, super beautiful. Lots to dig into there. Really good stuff. Chapter 98. Goes back to Zeth, and he's still just kind of trying to figure out, what the heck am I doing? He's kind of preparing for civil war. He's gearing up his monastery, trying to defend himself for the onslaught he thinks is coming. And then chapter 99. Chapter 99 is huge. This is that big chapter, that big moment I was talking about. We get a segment with Shallan, who at her wedding confronts and talks to her mother, who is none other than Chanarach, the final, ultimate, no questions asked reveal of that I think was predicted a long time ago by many folks, but still super cool to see. And in that moment, Shallan forgives her mother, which I really want to talk about because I'm super excited about it. I love that moment. Then we jump over to Dalinar. We're not done yet. Dalinar gets put into yet another vision. Odian's kind of torturing him, right? He's showing him all the low points of Dalinar's life, just trying to drag him through the mud. And he sticks him right in the scene, the moment where he kills his own wife, Evie. And Dalinar has to face Odium. Dalinar has to face himself in this. Some really cool moments there. We get a very surprise cameo by a certain name that we'll get to and chat about. And then that closes out the rest of day 8. Yeah, day 8.
Sounds good. All right, Paul, do you have two words out of these chapters?
I sure do. as we've been saying, there's been a lot in these chapters, but the way I'm summing it up best, in two words, if you will, is memories. As for the wedding scene we get, as well as Dalinar and Zeth, a lot of flashbacks and visions and scenes going on in this episode. And tests, as largely, actually, I'd say in reference to Shallan. We'll talk about this more in depth, but I feel like she's making major moves towards a fifth ideal. And we're also seeing things with Dalinar that obviously he's being tested and tried as much as possible. So I think memories and tests, I feel like that's been a fairly common theme with our spiritual realm people. But I think that still rings true, especially in this episode.
Elliot?
My two words for these chapters actually both come from the Shallan wedding scene, and they are boots and swords. And if you've read the chapters, it needs no explanation.
Boots. Great choice.
All righty. With that done, we can get into the epigraphs, which are from Rhythm of War by Navani Colin. I think I predicted this as soon as we got Words of Radiance, that we'd get all four of our, like, I think I called it Vorinism's greatest hits, because we got the Way of Kings in like day two, I think, and then Words of Radiance in day four. So I thought, all right, well, we're going to get Oathbringer and Rhythm of War in here. And we do indeed. So with these epigraphs, we've ended day 8, and so we'll do day 9 next week. But here we go. I sense I've done a poor job of explaining the exact nature of anti-light. This might be in part because even I, its discoverer, do not yet understand all the nuance of what I've done, though I do worry the ramifications of it will be felt for ages. Some might assume that light and anti-light are opposites, as can be found in philosophy, though not truly an actual physical science. Hot banishes and destroys cold. Light banishes and destroys darkness. Likewise, one might say that light and anti-light are opposites, in that they are mutually destructive. In mathematics, we have negative numbers, an impossible reality, yet an extremely useful model, as explained by the person who developed them. Negative 1 balances with 1 to create 0, both evening out at nothing. This is closer to the interactions of light and anti-light, yet I do not fully accept it as a proper parallel either. Instead, I find the closest model to be that of destructive interference in sound. A destructive waveform is not itself an opposite, but indeed the exact same waveform played opposite to the primary one. The destructive version of a melody is not its opposite then, but instead the exact same song played back at precisely the right time to negate the melody. If you were to hear the two in isolation, you would not be able to tell the difference. Anti-light is not inherently the opposite of standard light, nor is it negative or imaginary or a philosophical opposite. It is a different phase of the same entity. I see it more like the same melody played at a different time. If you played the destructive melody and the primary melody at the same time, they would reinforce one another instead of destroying. This is humans and singers, not opposites, the same song played at different times. I don't remember if something that straightforward was actually in the book Rhythm of War, but if it was, I missed it, and I wish I hadn't, because that was a way better explanation of anti-light than I feel like I've ever gotten.
I was gonna say, my main comments on this are I'm so impressed with how clear that was. I think that was a fantastic explanation and description, starting with what we understand, of course, of negative and positive numbers. And obviously, I get so fascinated by and absolutely love the ways which Brandon has brought music and sound into this. And yeah, that's something that I never, you know, thought of with this, but that, you know, the whole thing he says that they're two tones that are the same, indistinguishable, but just at different times, and you have the different ups and downs that completely counteract is really fascinating. How that it's like opposites, but the same. It makes me think, of course, of like sine and cosine, you know, lines back to good old, what, trigonometry or whatever, calculus stuff. Like they're just similar, but opposite. It's very fascinating. So, yeah, I think this is like one of those kind of awesome genius moments where Brandon has put really cool science into the books and really clear explanations and made it kind of tangible and relevant to the story. We've had so many mentions of the tones of Roshar and the tones that we learned in the last book about with our light, anti-light, and the host of other lights, you know, that there's like a tone associated is really interesting. My one question with this, sorry, I'm talking for a minute here. When we see that the tones, my question would be, I don't know how to phrase this. How does Roshar know the difference? You have the two tones that are the same, but at different times. How would it distinguish? Like, how does one tone pull one light and one the other light? Or does it pull both? I don't know.
My initial Cosmere answer to you is capital I intent. You need to have the intent to create anti-light in order to create anti-light. You need to already know it exists. Kind of like the Elantrian Aeons or the whatever the drawing in the air is. Like, as long as you have the correct intent of what you're creating and you create it with the precision that you need to, you will be successful. That would be my first answer to you. I'm not sure if that's canon.
I'd bet you're right about that.
And I don't really have a science-y answer for you. Maybe someone who knows a little bit more about the physics of sound and vibrations could tell us more, but I don't know. I don't know how you would determine the difference between the two.
Anything else on our excerpt from Rhythm of War?
Just to add that I thought it was a fun, I didn't really learn too much new from that, but like you said, Trevor, it summarized a few things really well and was this fun combination of science and yet almost poetry. Like as you're reading there, you were kind of hitting it a little bit. It almost comes off as this poetic explanation of sounds and rhythms and light and anti-light and humans and singers. It is pretty cool. I liked it.
I agree. Last thought is that I'm kind of grateful we have one that I don't, maybe someone will comment and totally throw this out the window, but I don't see any like deeper hidden bits of information in this. This was just a clear explanation that is really cool. And I think we got made fun of a little bit, probably rightfully so, for missing the last interludes a bit.
I was going to say that if you didn't, I apologize to all of our day seven epigraph readers. That was it's my fault. I was the one that was like, all right, this is definitely a shard. Which shard is it? We're going to talk about it. It's not a shard. It was pointed out to us that it was Yasna and Wit.
And I feel kind of silly now looking back. Like we were like trying to pick it apart so like intently. And granted, I think that's fair considering how many things are pick apartable in these books. I think we definitely massively overshot that one. This one's nice. It's bringing us down to earth. We're like, okay, yeah, okay, sound, math. That's it. There we go. Moving on.
Yeah. Now cue someone jumping in to explain to us that the secrets of the Cosmere are actually revealed here in these epigraphs and we're just missing it.
It's probably true. We somehow learn all of the names of the shards, any that are missing that we don't know in this epigraph, something like that.
Alrighty. We have not one, but two Zeth flashback chapters. And it's not to say that nothing happened in them, but I feel like there's not much to discuss in them. That there was an emotional scene of him and his father, Zeth and his father, of why do you still trust me? Like, there's no reason for you to still be here. And Naturo is still standing behind Zeth of I trust you. And Zeth says, all right, go hide. And then Zeth goes to recruit an army. What'd you guys get out of these chapters?
Yeah, I think you said it pretty well, Trevor. There's not a ton to break down in this. It's more of where we're getting the scenes that we've been waiting to see with Zeth. Not like the big scenes that we know happens. My understanding is we have not seen him named Truthless yet. I think that's like the scene we're waiting on. But we see how we're starting to get there. We see this unmade a bit. We see Zeth wrestling with this, running from it. And I have to say, I'm grateful to see him still going to and with his father. I think that's neat. I'm glad he's still around this time. But it's more of, I remember whenever we first talked about the end of like the big moments in Mistborn, a lot of things that happened, it's like there wasn't even like discussion opportunities. We're like, this is what happened, and it was cool.
Yeah.
The end, you know? Like, so there's some moments like that, and I feel like that's somewhat here. There are some things, you know, that are still kind of looming overhead, but nothing super, super major, unless I'm missing something, which is very possible.
I didn't pull anything else out of these chapters. Like you said, Trevor, they're emotional. Zeth is really struggling with what he's just seen and trying to decide what to do about it. But that's about it. That's the chapters for me.
I think it's kind of funny, kind of removed from the Zeth specifically, that for the longest time, years and years of reading this series, we've had absolutely nothing about Shinovar. And then by the time you're done with the first five books of this series, one of the places you've spent the most time is actually Shinovar. Like, we've spent so much page time, both current day and flashback, in Shinovar. I just wanted to point that out. All right. Time for the meat and potatoes of the episode. Shallan and more Shallan and more Shallan. Not Vale, not Radiant. They won't let her have them take control. It's just Shallan at her own wedding and running into the back room to talk to Chainrach. What'd you guys think? And yes, haha, Elliot, I was right. Just need to say.
Yes, yes, you were. And so spot on, right? That's what's bugging me is the fact that you nailed it exactly. And I was thinking, oh, okay, any slight version of this and I'll at least have a leg to stand on. And no, that's exactly what she said was coming.
She was still a little upset that she's covering up her memory from her wedding day. So she's trying her best to live in the moment at her wedding day and spend time on her vows. Look around, see the room. Yep.
And I thought a lot of this was really beautiful, getting to see the description of it. I mean, we get basically narrated the events of the wedding vows, all this kind of stuff. Paul, I actually had a question for you because you were there canonically. You were in the crowd standing there watching this. I think my question actually for you, though, is how different did the event at Dragonsteel 2024 feel to what's described in here? Is this like exactly what you witnessed there, or did it feel different? Like, what were your thoughts as you were reading this?
So I've been thinking about this. I need to go back and actually compare, because I remember I have some videos from the event, and I actually wanted to go see if I could compare. I need to go rewatch those. See if there were any more like dialogue tidbits or things that were specifically relevant. I haven't watched those since reading this, which is probably a big disservice. But I feel like a lot of it was pretty accurate. I think Shallan even mentions in this chapter that she, something about she talks about oil, like painting, like making art of this, not just in charcoal, but that.
Yeah.
And I remember they had a big, like framed art piece of Adolin and Shallan on their wedding day. And I really wanted to see, I haven't looked at my, there wasn't any art in this, in the physical book. Was there, Elliot, for this chapter? If so, you probably would have remembered it. And I would have, I'd probably remember it too, because I always get the art descriptions in the audiobook.
They're saving that for the Leatherbound in 10 years.
Okay, you're probably right. I was going to say I was really hoping or wanting to see if that art piece would be in the book. It certainly looks just like a lot of the art pieces, like the style and everything. Like, I bet you're right, Trevor. It probably will be in the Leatherbound edition. But that was one of the things that stuck out to me from the physical event I got to attend. And this, and Shallan talking about it, I thought was really cool. I wanted to hear about that. As far as the description and the dialogue, I need to go do a double check. It's hard to remember what exactly was said. It certainly wasn't the same, because at least at the event I got to attend, there was a speech from effectively every character. Yasna, Dalinar, Adolin, Shallan, I think even Kaladin, like Hoyd, had a ton of dialogue, and I don't think all that's in here. But I bet there are more things than I'm remembering. I do kind of wish, this is the one thing I wish I would have been able to read, like right following, like if I could have read this like right afterward, it probably would have been super cool, because now I'm like questioning everything.
I do gotta say, I'm very glad that he put this in here as a flashback, as a vision, because I mean, this happened between Oathbringer and Rhythm of War, right?
Well, if we're getting technical, it happened between the second to last chapter of Oathbringer and the last chapter of Oathbringer.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because
that's right.
You're super upset because we didn't see it.
Yeah, and I was super upset, like really upset. Okay, go back and watch that episode of me getting mad about the fact that wedding happened off page. So Brandon must have listened to that episode, because that probably came out prior to him writing this draft, actually. So he probably went, oh, okay, I need to go write that and then add it here in these chapters. So thank you, Brandon. Appreciate that.
I think we brought it back up when, spoilers for Mistborn, Vin and Elend get married. And you're like, once again, there's no wedding scene. They just stand there and get married. And
Brandon, they do show that one, though. But yeah, pretty anticlimactic. No fancy, right. Fancy things there. But I wanted to also make the joke that, going back to what you first said, Trevor, so Shallan goes and confronts Chanarach, and both Vale and Radiant, who have been, I feel like, fairly quick to step in for Shallan in a lot of situations, were like, no way.
Right.
Nope, I'm not going near this. This is all you, Shallan, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, before we get to the Chana stuff, Elliot, on the outline you have, did you notice the wedding vows? What do you mean by that? Like, yes, I saw them, but what do you mean?
I was definitely going to point this out to you guys. So before I get into the wedding vows, can anybody recite for me the first ideal of the Knights Radiant?
I think I know where you're going with this a little bit, but yes, the first ideal of the Knights Radiant is life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.
Perfect. Now let me read you their vows. Adolin, Shallan, my life is yours, my strength is yours, and our journeys are now one. And then Shallan, it says the same thing, but then adds in a bunch of other like little bits and pieces. But it's like word for word, the Knight Radiant first ideal just kind of turned into a meaty you oath. which fits perfectly in a wedding. And I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I thought cool. so too, Elliot. Do y'all think that there's any weight to this beyond, like, I'm confident in their society. This is like a, you know, Vorinism and all the things, like,
yeah,
it's just a part of that. That's how I was understanding it, but I didn't know if there was anything else I should be expecting.
So it's actually kind of interesting. So in world, you could obviously write this off as this is just a traditional religious wedding, and that's where the vows come from, is the Knights Radiant. Like, they've done vows like this for thousands of years in a traditional Vorin wedding. But I wonder, actually, if there's some, like, in-world strengthening capital C connection, because you're, like, swearing an oath. Like, if honor strengthens a marriage sworn by this, that's actually an interesting idea. If honor was alive and not being a jerk at the moment.
Fair. Fair. Yeah, that was the question I had. There was... I don't remember, Elliot, maybe you're about to prove me wrong or something. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I don't remember anything else in the chapter that made me think that there was something more happening, but it was certainly effective and impactful. I don't think I'm putting the right words to it. Meaningful is probably the right word. And I thought it was interesting to see the, like, vows and marriage systems that we often see in real life, like, kind of paired into this world, into the Cosmere, like the vows and all the things. Thought it was fascinating. I like how it adapted, which was pretty fun. But yeah, I wasn't taking it as anything more other than this is, like you said, Trevor, probably like a traditional Vorin wedding, how it's officiated. Last thought I have. Sorry, I'm really rolling here. Only thing that I have to add, what would be fascinating is if this was not... I don't know if these vows were written by Shallan and Adolin, or if it's a traditional thing. I'm guessing it's traditional, but if it isn't, I wonder if there is some way that they've somehow sworn an oath and had some more capital C connection to either each other and honor, or both. I don't know. I think I'm going too far with that. I think it's just, this is how it goes. These are the things we say and commit to each other. But
I think the capital C connection makes a ton of sense, regardless of what they say. Like, the act of going through a marriage and pledging yourself to someone and little c connecting on that level, from what we know about how connection works, that's absolutely going to boost your capital C connection. You know, your bond to them is going to get a whole lot bigger for sure. The only other bit I noticed from this chapter I wanted to bring up was, it's pointed out specifically that by going through this moment with Shallan, Testament appears to, like, heal some. Which is not surprising. We've seen Maya make pretty big steps from being a deadeye to being more alive. But this moment here with Testament felt kind of important, of experiencing the emotions and the journey, I guess, with Shallan is taking Testament on a journey towards maybe reforming herself or healing or whatever that looks like for her.
I didn't think that much of it on my first listen of this, but on my second, I thought it was actually really interesting that through the wedding scene specifically, Testament heals, and not the Chanarach scene that we're about to talk about. I feel like Testament is way more tied to Chanarach and Shallan remembering and accepting her past there. I feel like that healing scene should have come more in chapter 99 than in chapter 97. So I thought that was interesting that the wedding scene would do that for Testament, but it's not a complaint. I just thought it was interesting. All right. Are we ready for chapter 99?
No.
Okay, we're going to do it anyway. All right. We chase Chanarach out the door. And Shallan tries to retreat as Vale or Radiant or maybe both. And neither of them will do it for her. And then she goes and has a talk with Chanarach. And by the end of the chapter, it's revealed it is a real conversation with actual Chanarach. She gives current actual information that was new to us that would not have been true at the time. So this is an actual connection with current day Chanarach. She's genuinely talking to her mom.
Which is the second time that's happened with a herald. If you remember, this happened with Yezrian and Dalinar already. Yep. So interesting that this is happening, that these visions in the spiritual realm are sucking in the actual souls of the heralds to have actual conversations with them.
This one I feel like is more powerful than the Yezrian one, though, because Yezrian current day is dead.
Yes.
So that whatever that means of talking to current day Yezrian, that doesn't really have that much of a punch to me. But
I agree.
Talking to current day Chanarach absolutely has all of the weight that this chapter is trying to pull off.
Which, before we get to the weight and the big moment, the hit it out of the park moment, a few things get confirmed here. First, Chanarach is dead. She's on Braze. So we saw her. She came back to Roshar. She was at the wedding. And now she's not anymore. She has somehow, after that, died again.
Yep. She said a couple months ago, I think, she went back to Braze or something like that. That was the time frame.
That sounds right. So as far as we know, at least Taln, Shalash, and Chanarach are all now back on Braze.
Correct.
Yezrian is not, because he's ultimate death.
Correct.
Non-recoverable death, however that
only works. Only one for your bingo board.
Yeah. Well, okay. We'll have that debate later.
Okay.
Where was I going with this? Oh, and then the other reveal here is Chanarach confirms, Trevor, I don't know if this was your theory here on the podcast, and I'm sure you got it from somewhere else, or maybe it was yours, that the start of this whole thing, all the desolations, this new desolation happening, all the events of these books getting kicked off, was not Taln breaking. Taln never broke. It was Chanarach, as was talked about. Of the theory ran, Shallan's mother was Chanarach. And when Shallan killed her, she went back to Braze, and now she's there, and she's a lot weaker than Taln, so she breaks, starts whole desolation. That's exactly what happened, and Chana tells us about that here.
Yeah, I was certainly, I knew we were having the Chanarach's Shallan's mom reveal and that conversation. We did get it confirmed right away, and I was almost a little surprised that we got this confirmed. I was pretty bought into that Shallan was the daughter of a herald, was the daughter of Chanarach. I was not fully convinced that her killing her mom was what began the desolation, what began this whole thing. And it's just flat out confirmed here, and that surprised me a bit. I'm not surprised in disbelief of whoa, that's not how that's supposed to work. Obviously, that makes perfect sense. I was just, like Elliot said, I was kind of under the impression Taln broke after all these many years.
I agree with you that this is confirmation of all of that. This was always... not always. This was postulated for a long time, so not a huge reveal to me. Where my brain's at now is the combination of the prologue to this book tie into Chinarach's death. And here's the problem. What we've recently learned is the prologue of this book, the Stormfather, as talking to Gavilar, says, "Whoa, a herald just died. That's a big deal. Oh, no." And Gavilar's like, "What do you mean? The heralds are already on Braised and I'm supposed to go join them or something." And so and then there's a schism between the two of them. So that made me think, when we read that, actually when I read that in the previews, I thought, okay, Shallan's killing her mom and Gavilar dying must line up to the same night, which would be crazy, by the way. But like, if the Stormfather is talking to Gavilar the night he dies and says, "Whoa, there's a herald that just died. That's not good." I assumed that was Shallan killing her mother. Here's the problem, though. Nails in both scenes. Right?
But only through Sion.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay.
He's got a lackey guy who's there in the room, and he pulls out a Sion, and Channa talks to Nail through that.
Okay. You're right. I keep putting Nail in that scene like fully, but you're right. It is through Sion. Never mind. That theory is still completely holds up.
I think it still could work. I think it could still work of those events happening the same night.
Which is crazy.
Yes.
This whole book is crazy, Trevor.
True.
And then we get to the big moment, which I loved in this scene, which carries so much more weight, like we were just saying, because this is Chinarach here speaking to actual Shallan in the scene. And after they talk about some of this, "Oh, I broke. It's my fault that I did all of this. I tried to kill you." And Shallan says, "I forgive you." And the first time I read this, that line just hit me. It absolutely went grand slam the whole way. That's a powerful moment. Shallan has just been processing through, my own mother tried to kill me. Yes, she's crazy. Yes, there's some other weird things going on. But when your own mother goes to stab you and murder you, that does some damage to you. I mean, as we've seen. So for Shallan to get to that point where she can say, "I forgive you," that is powerful. That is really powerful. This moment was big for me.
I was waiting for that to be like fifth ideal Shallan of I forgive you. Like, or maybe even like a fourth ideal second and fully healed testament or something like that.
That's one of the things I was saying. And to echo you, Elliot, I agree. That was really impactful. I can't even fathom that, you know, engagement to get to that point. And honestly, we know Chinarach is so broken from the time of torment and just the age and everything that has been part of her story as a herald, that I imagine it was massively impactful to her as well. It was honestly kind of heartbreaking at the same time, because she also says things like she won't be able to see Shallan's brothers, but like, please tell them hello. You know, yeah. It was quite an emotional set of chapters all around. And that was the crux of it. That was the big moment. And I can't, so the Lightweaver the Lightweaver oaths, truths, are so ambiguous and hard for me to understand.
Yeah.
They seem a bit complicated, but this felt like it had to be in the right direction. Just understanding how a lot of our things work, this felt like it had to be a big moment. A lot of Shallan's progression as a Lightweaver has been addressing things in her past. And addressing this is like the big one. Like, this is the thing, the big one. We had moments with Testament, which were also like the big one. You know, there's a lot of big moments, but this feels like the last layer of the onion. I feel like we've had a lot of Shallan flashbacks, a lot of Shallan reveals, the reveal that she killed her mother, the reveal that she had another spren, the reveal way back whenever you find out simply that she has a shard blade. Like, there's so many reveals and layers to Shallan. This feels like the final one. I would rest and predict this is the final layer to Shallan's character. And frankly, I could be wrong about that, but frankly, I think that's the case, and I'm quite relieved for her sake.
So are you saying that she's going to wake up on day 9, fifth ideal?
No, I'm not saying that.
Because there's got to be one more. There's got to be at least something for fifth ideal.
You're right. There's got to be something else, and I don't know what that is. The thing, like I say, the Lightweaver ideals kind of trip me out. I don't know if this has that impact, or if there's going to be some other moment where this comes through, but this certainly feels like the right direction. It's hard for me to say because we have not seen a fifth ideal yet, right?
Correct.
So I don't honestly know what it takes. I don't know if it's the same as the others of like you just hit that point and the time comes and the words come and the moment happens and you've hit the fifth ideal. I don't know if it's like that or if there. It sounds like it's a hard and non-common thing to happen. So I don't know what it might take. So I certainly would not say she's going to wake up on day 9 and be a fifth ideal radiant. I don't think that's the case, but I feel like this is like the perhaps the lead up to it in some way. Like I said, I don't know what I'm talking about here. Trying to predict this.
That is what happened to her with the fourth ideal at the beginning of this book. Mm-hmm. She was kind of in Shadesmar doing her thing, fighting Abaddai and saying, I'm scared, or, you know, all sorts of different things. And then she comes out of Shadesmar and she's fourth ideal. And she doesn't even know when it happened. So I do wonder if Shallan doesn't even know if she's fifth ideal at this point.
It is comical of how big of a deal it is whenever, let's say, like Kaladin gets a new ideal.
Right.
And how nonchalant it is. Nonchalant.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
Nonchalant it is when Shallan gets a new ideal. It's very interesting. And I would guess that that's due to the different orders they're a part of. But it could very well be whenever she gets out of the spiritual realm that she is a fifth ideal. I don't know. I don't know. If that's the case, I will believe it. I will believe it, but I'm not convinced that that's going to be the case. Simply, and honestly, my only reason for that is I don't know what it takes, and I don't know the mechanics of being a fifth ideal radiant. I don't know if it's different from the others or if it's just another ideal that they do. I don't actually know. So that's what's giving me pause.
I don't know quite what to predict for the fifth ideal part of it, but I can think of one additional layer to peel back for Shallan, and that's formless. Formless is not mentioned once in these two chapters, 97 and 99. So while this feels like a massive moment for Shallan, it doesn't at least initially appear to be the final putting to bed of formless, which I thought we got back in Rhythm of War.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden formless was back. So I could see either lining up with that fifth ideal or something else, the final confrontation between Shallan and formless.
Okay. Anything else on the Shallan stuff? All right, time for round two of chapter 99. We get a Dalinar spiritual realm flashback, and he is in none other than Rathalas, the Rift, with Gavinor hiding in the fire bunker with Evie. Whew. And could you think of a more intense scene to try to traumatize Gavinor with? No, I don't think I could. Now, that being said, I'm not sure how much Gavinor actually sees in this chapter. Like, I feel like it could have been way worse for Gavinor had he been, you know, just outside the tunnel as opposed to just inside the tunnel. But as far as Gavinor saw, it's him and his grandpa who, granted, he cringes at the sight of grandpa because he just saw him beating up Elokar a couple chapters ago. But Dalinar runs out the tunnel, grabbing the barrel by both hands and throwing it back up the top of the tunnel. Like, that's pretty epic. And then fighting the Blackthorn. I don't know if you saw that part, but, you know, that's Dalinar really gets a handle on this vision and tries to steer it where he wants.
Which, for definitely for Gavinor's sake, I'm grateful. It's really like sickening to me the things that Gavinor is being subjected to in this book. It's really heart-wrenching. So, like, him in this scene, like, instantly, of course, is bothering me. But thankfully, yeah, Dalinar kind of gets a hold of this, kind of flips a bit of the events that happen on their head. Obviously, there's no, like, time travel happening here. He's not actually saving Evie or anything that's happened, changing anything that's happened. But I'm hopeful at least Gavinor gets to see the difference potentially between an old Dalinar, the Blackthorn, and current day Dalinar. But I don't know.
And that might kind of happen here in this scene. I was gonna read it for you guys actually, because I think this is another big moment for Dalinar, and I love it. Odium is pushing him. Odium is trying to break him. I completely send him into insanity, break him. And Dalinar wonders as the scene starts, as once he realizes what it is, this might happen. I might lose it right here. And then we hit this. And yet, Odium did not know him, Dalinar, who he had become deep down. Odium could not see that man. For that man, he could not be broken by the truth. Truth was the weapon once used to bloody him, pulled from his own flesh afterward, and now held up as his finest blade. Peace. In that prison chamber, all became as if peaceful. Unite them. Who he had been, who he was, who he would become. That feels like the moment where his resolve steals, where Dalinar reaches that point where he says, yes, I was this man, but showing me who I was is something I've already faced, and it will not break me to tell me that. And I love that. But then a couple lines down, Gavinor pops in. Let's see. Yeah, if I keep reading, air warped around Dalinar, spiritual realm unraveling. And then it says, Grandpa, Gav said, I see you now. And that's kind of it. Like, it kind of goes on a little bit, hands him to Evie. But I wonder if what you were talking about there a second ago, if that could be maybe a bit of hope there. Of, it seems like Odium might be getting his claws into Gavinor by showing him that Dalinar is a terrible person. But for that moment there, Gavinor sees something. Could it be maybe that Grandpa's not all bad?
The way I interpreted that line was he sees Dalinar and not the random other guy that was in the cell. Because Dalinar has this line, I don't know if it's earlier in this chapter or the chapter before, that he can't see Gavinor's face anymore. Like, ever since Odium is taking control as of the day before that, they can't actually see each other anymore as each other. They're locked in whoever's body they're taking place. So I think that was Dalinar wrestling control back over the vision from Odium, and Gavinor now being able to see Dalinar as Dalinar. That's how I interpreted that. Elliot, you have a 961 quote. Do you want to break it out or shall I?
I can pop over to that one. It's on the very next page, what I was just reading. Because the epic keeps going. That's all happening down in the prison room. Then after that, he breaks out, does the thing you were mentioning a second ago, where he catches the flaming barrel of oil, throws it back up the tunnel, faces down the Blackthorn, Dalinar versus the Blackthorn. And as part of that scene, he turns to the second in command Ardent guy and is like, reverse orders, go tell the soldiers to go save people instead of kill people. And the guy, I think it's Kadash, right? Is the Ardent guy?
Yeah, it is Kadash. Yeah, Kadash. Shout out to Kadash.
That guy. Well, he just married Shallan like a couple of pages ago.
What?
He was the officiant at the wedding. Like he married the two of them, Adolin and Shallan.
I understand that, now.
It makes you do a double take, though. That was good.
You're right. I should clarify. He tells him, you know, go turn the order around. And Kadash is like, bro, it's too late. And Dalinar comes back with this one-liner. It's never too late to try and be a better man. And that was the yes moment. Yes. Print that on a throw pillow, put it on your bed, read it every night. Love that line.
Yeah, that's a good one. Taravangian hasn't revealed himself quite yet in the scene, and the Blackthorn shows up and says, "You cannot ignore me." The Blackthorn said, "I am you." And then, "Yes," Dalinar replied, "and no." And then Dalinar touches the Blackthorn. They have kind of a weird moment of like, "I am you. You'll see how you get to me in the future." Blah blah blah. But then Odium's playing all the hits and throws it to Noadon, like in the next page. And I'm really conflicted on this Noadon section because Michael Kramer, Paul, did you get this impression that Michael Kramer read these Noadon lines as Odium's voice, like, taunting Dalinar with these Noadon lines? Did you get that or not?
You have me questioning. I can certainly say no, I did not think that's what was happening. I do actively remember as soon as the name Noadon was thrown out, I sat up in my seat and was prepared to listen. I know that much. And so I think if I didn't, like, if you played it and I wasn't in the headspace of this is Noadon talking, I may be with you. I don't remember the specific phrasing well enough, but I do not doubt that's the case and that it does sound like that. I think knowing it was Noadon, like, kind of threw that thought out the window. I was ready for him because Noadon, I feel he's so... The things he said in all these visions were, like, not necessarily uplifting. They were more, I don't know how, what to say about them, character building, constructive criticism, or things like that. So it absolutely sounds like a lecture. But I didn't think it was Odium.
So the way I received it, these lines from Noadon are all directly from the Way of Kings. We've seen them before in different contexts. I received this in my ear as these phrases are just phrases. What you hold dear, Dalinar, from this book is not worth pursuing. And that Odium was like challenging the Way of Kings through this. I'm not sure if that is the proper interpretation of this page or not, though. Or if Dalinar is supposed to be taking, like, actual hope from Noadon here.
This does sound very different from the written text, because there's another bit of information to add to this puzzle as well, because so Noadon comes in. I took this as actual Noadon somehow breaking into the vision, repeating a bunch of lines we've heard already, but mm-hmm. there are italics all over. Certain words in certain sentences are italicized, and it's almost as if Noadon is repeating to him the classic words of Way of Kings, but applying them specifically to Dalinar's situation. Like he's coming in with the encouragement of, these are the things you know, these are the things you've been following, and every single one of them applies to you. Because like the most common word that's italicized in here is you and your.
Your, yeah.
So worth looking at on page 963 if you have this first edition hardback, hardcover. Because, yeah, that seems like I read this very differently than what you just described, Trevor, as hearing it in Odium's voice.
So if you flip to 94, well, starts at the bottom of 93, we get the Teravangian reveal for Dalinar. Let's start with, he's still hearing the voice, which Elliot, you're interpreting as Noadon. I'm interpreting as Odium. I'll read this here. Your pain, the voice said. All men have the same ultimate destination, Dalinar. But we are not creatures of destinations. It is the journey that shapes us. Our calloused feet, your calloused feet. Our backs, strong from carrying the weight of our travels. Your back, strong from carrying the weight of your travels. Our eyes open, your eyes open. You kept to the pain, Dalinar. Remember that. For the substance of our existence is not the achievement, but the method. The voice drifted away. Please don't leave me, Dalinar heaved. A shadow emerged from the chaos, Teravangian's voice, blah, blah, blah. Dalinar, my old friend, who are you calling for? The Stormfather, Navani? And then back on further down in 964, you could have been spared this torture, Teravangian said, his voice vibrating with the force of 1,000 drums. My predecessor offered to take your pain, but you refused, so now you must suffer. Teravangian, Odium, they were doomed. You must suffer, Teravangian said. It brings me no joy to see you like this, but it must be. But I, Dalinar thought, I did not give him my pain. I still don't know how to read that after going through it. What do you guys think?
I think that question that Teravangian asks him is a genuine one and not a mocking one. He says, Dalinar, my old friend, who are you calling for? The Stormfather, Navani? I think Odium doesn't realize that Dalinar is hearing Noadon, that these words from Way of Kings and Noadon, they're his raft in the storm. That's what Dalinar's clinging to. Like his sanity is clinging to a thread, and that thread is Noadon's voice in his head, reading the Way of Kings and applying it to him. Because I think those two sections are saying the opposite thing. Those words of Way of Kings are saying it is about the journey. It's not about the destination. And then later on, Teravangian is saying like the opposite, pretty much. And so this mm-hmm. this is like the voice of truth. Ooh. Ooh. This is the voice of truth in Dalinar's head. And it's the weapon against Odium that he can't see.
I would be more keen on your interpretation because it comes immediately after Dalinar taking back over the vision from Odium. And that's when he starts to hear Noadon from the previous scene of taking over the rift, doing what he wishes he had done, reversing the orders. And then he hears Noadon's voice, and then Teravangian wrestles control back over again.
But it could almost go back the other way, though, because the sentence right before the first Noadon line is kind of Dalinar failing again. Like he took the vision away from Odium, but then he sees Evie's corpse. And it says, It was so horrific that seeing it now, he had to acknowledge that any punishment delivered to him would be just. He deserved it. Almost like he's giving up in that moment. And then the very next thing is Noadon. So either it's the last gasp, grab onto that thread, or that's the capitulation point. He falls, and this is the mocking of Odium.
Yeah, now I'm going back the other way with you, because it says a voice upon the currents of this place. You must find the most important words a man can say. He knew that voice. Dalinar searched in the chaos. He wasn't Gavilar or Elokar or the Stormfather. Those words came to me from one who claimed to have seen the future. How is this possible? I asked in return. Have you been touched by the void? The reply was laughter. No, sweet king. The past is the future, and each man has lived. So must you. Noadon, Dalinar whispered, is that you? You will love, the haunting voice continued. You will hurt. You will dream. You will die. Each man's past is your future. I don't know. I really don't know if this is actually supposed to be Noadon and we're supposed to take hope, or if this is like a taunt from Taravangian.
I'll put my chips down. I think it's Noadon. Or like maybe I just slipped a second ago and said the word truth. We've seen that capitalized in this book before. I think this is real. I think this is a lifeline of support, not Odium mocking, because it doesn't match up with what comes later on when Taravangian reveals himself.
I would also agree with Elliot on this one. I think this is legit, partly because we get the Taravangian reveal afterward, and also because we're getting close to the end of this book, and I'm waiting for these big moments. And I think this is supposed to be one of those big moments of Dalinar, who's looked up to Noadon so much historically as the writer of the Way of Kings and everything, to have this moment. And also, for the sake of our podcast and our name, I'm very grateful. I sat up in my seat when I heard the name mentioned and thought, great, we did not wrongfully name our podcast from the first couple books. So
I'll take credit for that.
And you guys out there, I'd love your guys' experience on this too. If you were listening to the audiobook, if you were reading the physical copy, what did you think when you got to the end of chapter 99? Because I'm torn on this. I told you what I think it is, but the case is there for the other side of it. Is this actual Noadon, or is this Odium mocking him? Hop in our Discord and let us know.
To end this chapter and this episode, we get a quick Dalinar, like, pulls himself out of this vision and comes face to face with the Stormfather as a human in a cell? What? What?
And it's even fed to us in such a dramatic way, because continuing on from the quotes that Trevor, you read earlier, Dalinar realizes, I still have my pain, and that pain coalesces into a thread of connection. And he follows that thread of connection. It talks about him like crawling on the ground, pulling this thread of pain. And where does the pain lead? The pain leads to the Stormfather. Like, oh, wrench, like gut wrench there of where's the source of pain, or who's feeling the pain that's connecting to Dalinar? It's the Stormfather. And Dalinar feels it too. He feels sympathy, empathy, both, maybe.
You liar, Dalinar hissed. Dalinar felt his anger evaporating, again as he reminded him how he confronted problems. Punch them, break them, burn them down. Journey before destination. He needed to try something different. Still on his knees beside the Stormfather, he hesitantly put a hand on the Spren's shoulder. The pain flared, that all too familiar agony of failure and loss. You feel it too, Dalinar said. That's what led me to you, isn't it? Really interesting. Really interesting.
Very.
Do we get a Stormfather redemption arc in the last day here?
This is like the thing I've still never known what to make of. We go into this last book and our view and our trust in the Stormfather has just been ripped to shreds, thrown out. I don't even know what to make of the character. I don't know if he's important. I don't know if he's like good, bad, relevant, irrelevant, placed there by Odium, an agent of honor. I get exhausted thinking about it. I've got no idea.
With this scene, we have another big honor reveal about to come. Because watch this. Or listen to this. As you accuse me, I remember what honor did. I know his whole life. I'm an echo of him. And his failings are mine. Show me, Dalinar said. You'll hate me, the Stormfather whispered. I've failed you. Show me, Dalinar said softly. So I can understand. I thought we had the honor reveal that he was behind the Bot Intermishram backstabbing, and like he kind of just left the heralds out to dry. Apparently, that's not it. Apparently, we're going for more.
At this point, I'm beginning to expect a little bit of a double take. We've been led to mistrust. Very much mistrust. I was fully in the camp that the Stormfather is at least not working with us. And I feel like we might start to pull the reins back on that, see other things, but I'm not going to stand too firmly on that. It feels like we're maybe pointing that direction now.
Well, what's left to see here? We saw a big betrayal by Honor, Tanavast, but we have not yet seen the destruction of Honor. What if You'll Hate Me is because something crazy like the Stormfather killed Honor?
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but no, that's not going to happen, surely.
I don't know.
I'll run with this ball. Okay. Or at least had a part in it. I don't know how that can happen. I'm desperately trying to come up with something on the fly here. I don't know how. But there's got to be some big secret. It keeps hinting at this, like, don't look at my past. Like, you're not gonna like what you see. Like, there's obviously something that we're expected to discover. I got no idea what it is, but I could buy that. I'm supposed to be shooting it down.
Let me read the end of this chapter, because it's clearly Honor and Stormfather doing something in tandem. From the outside, Dalinar was a monster. How would Honor look from the inside? Did Taravangian, or Odium, realize what he'd done in reminding Dalinar of his pain? No. Taravangian saw only destinations. You'll hate us, me, Honor, for what we did. No, Dalinar replied. Understanding has never led to hatred. Show me. I cannot take your pain, but I can help you carry it. This is not a Stormfather backstabbing Honor thing. But both of them were around and doing something.
Probably. I can see a weird situation though where, okay, we just saw Honor do something not so honorable in betraying Mishram. I think what we're headed for is Honor breaks himself, not on purpose, by acting too dishonorable. What if the Stormfather plays a role in that, either driving him to that or maybe even just pointing that fact out? What if it's a Stormfather who presses Tanavast and is like, bro, you can't keep doing this. And that drives the power of Honor to explode, basically.
Maybe. I'll give you a maybe.
Also, anyone else pick up on some Samwise Gamgee vibes there and what you just read?
I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you. I mean, that's not what he says. He says, I can help you carry it.
Yeah, that's what Sam's trying to do.
He can do what Sam can't.
Sure.
Help him carry it. He can't not help him carry it.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. My only final thought about this is that I feel that this is the big. I think we're getting to the point. We're getting close to the end of the book now, that I'm starting to expect some big reveals that are going to flip things on its head. Call me crazy for thinking that. That's just it seems to be a common theme with a lot of these Brandon Sanderson books. So I think if there's an avenue for that, there's certainly an avenue for something crazy to have happened with the Stormfather.
I
think I'll leave it at that.
I'm of the prediction now that I think Cultivation might be the only shard left on the planet by the end of the book. I think we might be getting rid of both Honor and Odium by the end of this book. But that's where my headspace is at.
That's certainly reasonable. I grant you that.
Alrighty. Anything else, gentlemen?
The only other thing I have is a little bit of wrapping up a theme for day 8, if you're ready for that.
Yeah, theme for day 8.
So day 8 overshadows, not the right word, but the bulk of the themes I'm getting out of this day all come from this last chapter. So the word I picked is very heavily influenced by chapter 99 that we just spent most of this episode talking about. But I can tie a little bit of Zeth into it as well. Not a lot, but a little. The word that came to me, and it was very obvious, the theme for day 8 is forgiveness. You've got that powerful moment where Shallan forgives her mother. The word forgiveness is not used that I noticed in the Dalinar section of chapter 99, but I think that's exactly what we're dealing with, what we're talking about. There's that section that I read where Dalinar comes to peace with his past. That is forgiveness, kind of in action right there. And forgiveness is a concept that I've wrestled with personally myself. It's a tough thing for me to wrap my head around. Is what does it mean for me to forgive someone? What does it mean for me to forgive myself? And I came to understand it maybe a little bit better when someone explained it to me as forgiveness, and this is kind of the definition of the word, I think, is letting go. The word forgiveness means to let go. It doesn't mean that what you're forgiving and the person you're forgiving is now all better. It doesn't mean that we've erased the past, that it doesn't exist, that the pain is not there. It just means that you're no longer holding on to it. You're no longer dwelling on it. You're no longer letting it, you know, fester or torment you inside, whether it's something you did or whether it's something that someone else did. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here in these scenes. When Shallan forgives her mother, the response, the words that Shauna says right back to her is, "I don't deserve that." And Shallan says, "I give it anyway." And that is the concept of forgiveness. It's not something that has to be accepted. It's not something that has to be deserved. It's simply someone on either side of the equation saying, "I'm choosing to let this go. And I'm not going to let this influence me or drive me or manipulate me anymore." And that's exactly what Dalinar is doing in his scene where he says, "Yes, I did these things, but I'm going to choose to let it go. I'm not going to let it drive me. I'm not going to let it torment me. I can accept this truth. I can face it. I'm forgiving myself in that moment." And the one little thread that I can tie into Zeth just a little bit, Zeth gets the reveal in this day that he's going through an audition. He is auditioning to be a herald. And there's a bit in that scene where Zeth goes, "Oh, shoot, that means I have to be immortal. That's not what I want. I just want the voices to be quiet. I just want the peace of ending this. I want to do my job so that I can die, so that I can move on, so I can be done with all this." And I almost kind of wonder if that's the start of a question of, can Zeth forgive himself? Can Zeth accept this possibility of continuing on, to go on and do more things? Because in order to do that, he's going to have to let go of those voices, of those deaths, of those murders, those assassinations, all those things he did. I don't think Zeth has forgiven himself for those things. Is that what he's going to have to face going forward? And was that the seed of it that we just saw here in that day? So there you go. Forgiveness, day 8.
Elliot said it's not, the word isn't used, but it is directly referenced in the Dalinar section. when Dalinar shows up in chapter 99, sees Evie, he says he remembers her voice on Thalen Field. Do you remember what she says at the end of Oathbringer?
No.
I forgive you.
Ah, yes.
When he's holding the perpendicularity, he hears Evie's voice and she says, I forgive you. So it wasn't directly quoted, but Dalinar did directly reference it. So there you go for your theme.
Yeah, even more fuel for the forgiveness fire. It's pretty cool. I think that's been a good meme. I think. Sorry, yeah, that was not the right way to say that at all. My sincerest apologies for that. I did not think about that twice. I was gonna say though, just final thoughts. I think that's a really great theme for this day, and I know there's been a lot of days in this book, I feel like, that have had challenging themes. This is certainly a challenging theme, but I feel also a very uplifting theme, which is really exciting.
All right. For those of you who have been following along closely with our chapter splits, our interludes are next week, not this. So we will be doing interlude 15 through chapter 104 for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See you next time.
Toodles.